Welcome to the Carl Nelson Show
on Washington, D.C.'s 1450 WOL Radio and live around the world on WOLDCNews.com.
And thank you for hanging around with us. We've got Angela Allen Bell. She's a professor at Southern University Law Center in Baton Rouge. We've got two really close friends of the so-called Angola 3 with us as well, Parnell Herbert and also Mwulamu Johnson. Number to call to speak to them about the Angola 3. These are some brothers who have been in solitary confinement for 40 years, going on 41 years now, folks. And like I told you, remember Nelson Mandela did 27, and they've getting very little attention for what they've done. They've been accused of killing a guard in Angola prison, and all they wanted to do was start a chapter of the Black Panther Party once they got there. Again, the number to call to speak to them, 800-450-7876 or 855-797-TALK. Let's go to line one. Let's go to Philip in Chicago. Philip?
Can you hear me, sir?
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Okay, good. I'm sitting here, and the more I hear about this story, it reminds me of this Eddie Murphy, Martin Lawrence movie called Life, where I don't remember the full plot of it. But my point is, and it was a really good movie, and it kind of reminds me a lot of the situations, what's going on with these two brothers that's been in solitary. But my point to the attorney and to the playwright is, you know, a lot of these cases need celebrity. And being that Martin Lawrence and Eddie Murphy played a couple of characters in such a movie that was so close, even though it was a comedy, it was, the characters seemed so closely jointed that maybe if you reached out to those brothers, maybe the celebrity help might bring a light on it that, you know, maybe the president could. Does it make any sense?
It does make sense. And I want to suggest to you that we think you're onto something. We're thinking the very same way. What we have done in the last year is made a very committed effort to do exactly what it is that you are suggesting. And I want to tell you that we're actually yielding some results. I have some supporters that I want to share with you at this moment. We have, of course, the support of Amnesty International. They've been one of our biggest supporters. They have led a campaign last year for the 40th anniversary that generated over 60,000 signatures that we ended up delivering to the governor of the state of Louisiana. And Amnesty, at this very moment, if you go to their website, there is a campaign that they have launched, and they're asking the public to join into a petition. We have enlisted the support of the Baton Rouge chapter of the NAACP, the Slidell-St. Tammany chapter of the National Action Network, Representative Patricia Smith in the Louisiana Legislative Black Caucus, Congressman Cedric Richmond. The National Urban League has also enlisted as a supporter, and we have the mighty strength of the National Religious Campaign Against Torture. So one of our challenges, I think, was that as we reach out to people, there was a hesitancy because there is this concern that what if these guys really did it? What if they did kill a prison guard? And so we've been met with some reluctance, but what people have been able to do is largely as a result of Wallace and Woodfox being prudent enough over the course of their 41 years in confinement to fight every frivolous charge, to litigate every possible avenue of this case, they have developed an incredible paper trail. And it is that paper trail that sings the song of innocence for them, and that is why all of these groups have joined in with us. And so now that we are picking up momentum and support, we're looking now to entertainers, we're looking to media outlets, we are looking to people to do exactly what they did when Gina 6 took place, to decide for one day that this is unacceptable and life is going to stop in Louisiana, and when they leave, things will change. And so we are enlisting that support, and I appreciate you making that suggestion, and I just want to affirm for you that we're thinking along the same lines. Momentum is happening, and we're welcoming anyone that wants to join forces with us to bring this to a close, not just for Wallace and Woodfox, not for all of the people in Louisiana that being subject to prosecutorial misconduct, but on a very national level, This is happening in all states. People are being subject to this arbitrary system of being thrown in solitary confinement, oftentimes for having done absolutely nothing. And once they get in, they have no way out. And so this is a movement that will be much larger than Wallace and Woodfox. That is what they envision, and that is what we're seeking to bring to life.
And also with that, you mentioned celebrity. I personally contacted Glenn Plummer. Glenn Plummer came down to New Orleans, and we hung out for a week. And he went over the script, and he loved it. And he told me, you know what, Ben? The only thing that stopped, he said, we can make this movie. He said, we can get the brothers in Hollywood to make this movie, but we still have to sell it to someone. And I don't know anything about Hollywood and how that works. I'm a New Orleans playwright. Brother said, you know what's holding you back on this? Why they're not going to buy the movie? Because you don't have a white hero. If you look at all these movies, all these black movies, you got Tarzan in there somewhere. There's a white hero somewhere in there. And, you know, when Clint, Brother Denzel won the Academy Award for Best Actor, but the white guy, the white cop, was the hero. Brother won the Academy Award for Idi Amin, and he got Forrest Whitaker. He won for Best Actor, but the white guy who got on the bus at the end of the movie and went and exposed what was happening with the hero. So as far as that goes, I'm challenged with, in fact, I'm not going to do it. I'm going to find someone else to write it as a screenplay. Putting in a white hero is fine, because there are a bunch of white folks involved in this movement. We're talking about people in England and all over the world. So we don't have a problem putting white heroes in there. We got white, black, brown, red, and yellow heroes all along in this story. Let me say also, I personally put a packet in Tavis Smiley's hand, while my comrade Maria Hines put a packet. We were standing side by side. She went to Cornell West. I went to Tavis Smiley. I put my packet in Tavis' hand. Brother smiled at me, shook my hand, put his hand on the packet. And when I said, this is a packet on the Angola 3, brother moved his hand away like I burned him with fire. Mm. He said, well look, my briefcase is full. Will you mail it to me? Here's my card. I wouldn't even take the card. At the same time, Maria Hines took the packet and Cornell West hand, and Cornell said, yeah, I'll sign it right now, you know. It was not a packet to sign. It's not a petition to sign. It's a packet of information to tell you about Angola 3 and ask for your support. He said, sure, you know, he took it and he put it down with his briefcase, and he reached across Tavis Smiley and shook my hand. So, you know, I'm throwing their names out there because it happened, you know. I'm telling you exactly what happened. And that's what's going on. We've got people who are dealing with a couple of things. One is, what's in it for me? And the other is, I don't know if I want to get my hands dirty on this.
Right.
You know, but these brothers, bottom line, are innocent. And one of the biggest factors that would tell me, you and anyone else who's saying maybe they're not innocent, the widow of the murder victim, the widow of the prison guard. That guy was 21 years old when he was murdered. She was 16 years old. So he married a 16-year-old girl. That 16-year-old girl, when they told her what happened, that her husband was dead, she said she wanted to run out there and pull the switch herself. She wanted to kill him. Now, Jeannie Verrett is her name. Jeannie Verrett now says, I no longer believe that they are guilty. She said, if these men have been in prison all this time, charged and convicted of a crime they have not committed, they have been in hell for a very long time, and I do not believe they are guilty of this crime.
Wow.
Okay, so I'm going to let it go at that. My throat's messed up. I'm trying to... Anyway, y'all go ahead.
Philip, you got a follow-up?
No, thanks, Carl. This is very deep, and I just, man, just praying that, you know, these brothers get out, first of all, and that all the help and assistance that you all need. Is there anything that the public could do from this point?
Yes, actually, there are a number of things that the public can do. One of the most helpful things, it may seem very small, but it's extremely helpful right now, is if Wallace and Woodfox could hear from you, a simple card in the mail to let them know that you're praying, you're doing what you can do to support them from where you are. Their contact information is listed on the Angola 3's website. That's one really simple thing. We are also very committed to pursuing this through religious channels.
Hang on a second, Angie, because we got to take another break. Attorney Angela Bell is with us.
Okay, sure.
We got to take another break. Traffic and weather update. When we come back, we talk more about the Angola 3. 41 years in solitary confinement. And you guys thought Mandela was rough for doing 27 or 28. These brothers have done 41 years for just being Panthers or trying to be Panthers. We'll take your phone calls, though, right after this short break.
And now back to the Carl Nelson Show on Washington, D.C.'s 1450 WOL Radio.
And we're back, folks. We're talking about two brothers still in solitary confinement in Angola. Are they in Angola prison still, or have they been moved, you said?
They've been moved. Mm-hmm. Herman Wallace is currently at Elaine Hunt Correctional Center right outside of Baton Rouge in St. Gabriel, Louisiana. Mm-hmm. Albert Woodfox is at David Wade Correctional Center in Homer, Louisiana. Woodfox's conviction was overturned about 2 weeks ago, and that is the third time that has happened. So we're closer to a resolution with Woodfox than we are with Wallace. But they both remain in custody. They were moved from Angola, but they are housed in very similar situations as they were in Angola, so it would still be considered isolation. Herman Wallace is closer to his family in New Orleans. He's only about an hour's drive away, but Woodfox is about a 5 to 6 hour drive away from his roots in New Orleans, and he has a brother, a brother who lives in Texas, who makes the pilgrimage from Texas to see him in Louisiana twice a month.
All right. Before the break, I think it was Philip in Chicago wanted to know, what can we do to help? And you were telling us some things we can do.
Yes, I was. One of the things was, of course, just to constantly remind Herman and Wallace that you have not forgotten about them, because we are convinced that the state really thought that they were going to die behind these prison walls. But God saw it differently, and he saw fit to bring help to them in the 90s, and he's going to see fit that they be released. So one of the things that you could do is just to keep them encouraged at this moment and make them aware that when they went back to that prison in the 70s and they stood up and they put themselves on the line to protect other people's children, that you have not forgotten about their deeds. The second thing is, if you go to the Angola 3 News website, you'll see the addresses for both Wallace and Woodfox, but you will also be able to sign up for communication, so you will know if there are events that we're hosting, if there are petition drives that we're running. The third thing is, at this moment, Amnesty International has a petition posted on their website. The fourth thing is that we are asking anybody who feels a degree of conviction about this to speak of it. Let Buddy Caldwell know, the Attorney General of the state of Louisiana, that you do not feel this is an appropriate use of tax dollars. In the state of Louisiana at this very moment, there's a case pending before the Louisiana Supreme Court about tax dollars that are being used for educational purposes. We're fighting over tax dollars here. We can't pay for medical care. We can't pay for schools, but yet we're exceeding costs over $4 million on this particular case. So you could write letters to Buddy Caldwell, to the governor, Jindal, as well as to the Department of Corrections, and let them know how you feel about these human rights abuses and how you feel about these wrongful convictions. And also, if you wish to help financially and not be involved otherwise, you certainly can do that as well by helping either Albert or Hermes directly, or by going through the Angola 3 News to make a contribution for their defense.
All right. 800.
Something I would like to add, Carl.
Go ahead.
I think Brother Phillips asked about helping. I've got a play. The title of the play is Angola 3, and it tells their story. And the
telling this story is how we get people like you and Phillip and everyone else to make them aware that this is going on. The more people are aware that this and situations like this, because you probably got the same thing going on in D.C. The word is just not out yet. We got to find ways to get this word out. My stage play, I've done it in New Orleans, Houston, and New Orleans again. I'm about to do it in New Orleans again. It's like an annual thing. It's the 41st anniversary, April 17th and 18th. So we'll do it. What I would like to do, if you can connect with, if anyone there is a producer and connect with that, I would bring my script. Get your own director, your own cast, and stay at the play. You know, I want the play out there. I want to get the word out there. We also, and we can send you this call right away. We have a documentary called Land of the Free. And this was done, Samuel L. Jackson, WFL, about celebrities. Samuel L. Jackson narrated this documentary, Land of the Free. We can send you this. And what we ask is that you do screenings. You know, we can send you a few of them, and you give them to people who you think are conscious, and we'll share them with other people, and just do a screening and view this documentary, which tells the story of the Land of the Free. I'm sorry, tells the story of Angola 3, although that documentary was completed about 4 years ago. So the ending in that documentary makes everything seem promising and like maybe they were about to get out, but that didn't happen. Mm. So along with the documentary, we would want to get someone who is aware, in fact, just make you aware, to send you the information when you do the documentary, send you the information when that documentary is over with, have Q&A, and say, let me get this clear to you and tell the audience, okay, here's where we stand today. Here's what happened since the completion of that documentary. And again, I'll be sure, Carl, that we send you a few copies of that. You distribute them to some people. And again, the script is here. I wrote the play. And I'm not trying to make money off of it. I want to see my brothers out of jail.
All right.
I want to see these brothers out of prison because they deserve to be out here, free men, doing the work that they did. In fact, they both told me. I retired a few years ago, and I told them, I said, man, I can't wait till we get you guys out of here so I can retire for real. And they both told me at two different times, now, when we come out, you're not going to retire. You have to step it up a notch because we're coming back to finish the work that we started 40 years ago.
All right. Well, just get in touch with producer Clem, and we can work that out.
I also want to mention that there are a total of four documentaries that the public should be aware of. Parnell mentioned In the Land of the Free. That is one. There is another one called The Angola 3, Black Panthers and the Last Slave Plantation. These are all on Amazon or through the Angola 3 news website. The third one is a recent release called Hard Time, and it's a film by Ron Harpell. And the fourth one is called Herman's House. And this particular documentary will actually be airing on PBS over the summer. So there's a total of four videos. All of them are great teaching tools. So if anybody's in a position where they're working with students or they want to host a community showing, these are things that we're calling on the public to do. We also want people to use social media to get the word out about the Angola 3. We also want performers and entertainers, when they have opportunities to be in the public, if you have a song on your heart, get the song written and speak it out. Use that as a mechanism of making the public aware, because we are convinced that when people become aware of some of the things that have happened in our criminal justice system, people are going to be empowered and people are going to be called to act. So a lot of the inaction is a result of people not being aware. So we would appreciate the public not just listening, but to actually feel a call to act once this interview is over. everybody can contribute in some type of way. So if you're a writer, we want written stories. If you're a performer, we want you to perform. But don't let us get off the air and everybody goes back to doing what they were doing before we got on the air. This is a call for change. In Louisiana and across the nation, certain things are just unacceptable in a civilized society. And this has gone too far, and it has been unchecked for too long.
All right. 800-450-7876 or 855-797-TALK. Let's go to line two. Freedom's in D.C. You've been holding for a while. Freedom?
Hey, yes, sir. Yes, sir, Carl. Yeah, I appreciate, I really, really, really appreciate this particular show, especially this topic about the Angola 3. I think it's important to keep in mind, you know, that even with the great work that organizations like Amnesty International does, you know, they give very good statistics and they lay out a lot of up to date information, but we must be clear that these brothers, you know, are political prisoners. You know, the U.S. has political prisoners, and one of the approaches that I know, you know, the Jericho movement and movements to free Mumia have been using recently was to address the special rapporteur at the United Nations, Juan Mendez, and he has, you know, clearly stated that, you know, solitary confinement. Is a human rights abuse. And I think that's on record. I don't think we have to, dispute that at all. These brothers and sisters you have on this interview are excellent. They're laying out this case so well. And but I think I want to just ask or see if there's been any movement in terms of moving the question around the, the human rights abuses that Juan Mendez has, you know, laid out, because I think his analysis is going to give us another leg in order to not only free Angola 3 and all political prisoners, but to also have them compensated for, you know, for the suffering over the years. You know, I mean, clearly.
20 seconds.
All right. Tell you what, Freedom, hang on a second, because we got to take a break. 800-450-7876 or 855-797-TALK. We'll take your calls right after this for the Angola 3.
And now back
to the Carl Nelson Show
on Washington, D.C.'s 1450.
1450 WOL Radio.
And thanks for staying with us. We're discussing the Angola 3. Joining us, attorney Angela Allen Bell. And also with us as well, we have Emwali. I hope I'm pronouncing your name. I hope I'm mangling your name.
Emwali. Walimu.
Johnson. And also Parnell Herbert. And is Freedom still with us?
Yes, sir.
All right. Go ahead, Brother Freedom.
Yeah, no, I was just, you know, just trying to get, you know, any feedback as far as what the leaders, the folk in leadership on the Angola 3 situation are doing about the UN, United Nations Special Rapporteur, Juan Mendez's, analysis of this being torture and that it's a violation. And the reason why that's important is because, obviously, I mean, you know, the United States always chastises other nations and always criticizes other nations about their torture and their human rights violations. So clearly there's another angle, another part of this case for the, you know, freeing political prisoners that we could use to, to further that goal. And I think that I just want to get a follow-up on that. But I also call, you know, just to let you know, I keep telling you, when I call in here, you know, you have a special program and the continuity of your program is important. And so by you having this discussion today, even, you know, it certifies that much more in my mind. You know, very few folk like to touch on political prisoners. Even Amnesty International, with all the great work it does, doesn't use the language. And probably strategically, but most importantly, it's damaging, because that's clearly what we're talking about, political prisoners. And so I just want to get a little feedback on that from the sister and the brothers on the line, so I can just move forward. I'm always involved with the Angola 3. Anytime we move in D.C., I'm always involved, clearly, with them. Robert King I've met several times, and it's a beautiful brother. So I want to make sure we can move forward with some more, you know, legal issues that we can deal with.
I greatly appreciate this call from you, Freedom, and you've raised two really, really fundamentally important issues. So I'd like to take them separately. As to political prisoners, without a doubt, that is the situation with the Angola 3, and that is a subject matter that has largely been ignored in this country. we are certainly aware that when you look at the FBI files back in the early 70s, when you had the Church Commission study some of what was being done in the dark, it is a documented fact at this point that the FBI said, we are after, by any means necessary, anybody practicing this Panther theology, they have to be silenced. We will kill them. We will incarcerate them. And the timing of what has happened with the Angola 3 coincides beautifully with the paper trail that the FBI has now released to the public. So I think that what you are saying is well documented, that this case happened at the very same time that we now know the government was in this business of silencing the Panthers by any mechanism possible. I have chosen to present on this topic this summer, so there will be more scholarship on this concerning Angola 3 and political prisoners in this country. My hope is to fashion a remedy for us to immediately get a way of releasing these people who are yet in custody with their stories untold. So that is forthcoming. The second part of your call involves the human rights rapporteur, Mr. Mendez, and I want to say to you, just on the 14th of March, Mr. Mendez stood before the Inter-American Commission on Human Rights and spoke to them about abuses in solitary, and that was not the first time. He did so in 2001 again, urging that some changes happen, 2011. He did not feel pleased with the results, so just 2 weeks ago, on the 14th of this month, he stood before them and made a plea, and I'm going to quote him. He says, I am concerned about the general lack of official information and statistics on the use of solitary. He goes on to say the use of solitary can only be accepted under exceptional circumstances and should only be applied as a last resort and for the longest, shortest term possible. He goes on to say that I am absolutely against prolonged solitary, and he suggests not using solitary confinement longer than 15 days. He's spoken on every opportunity he has had to let the world know that this is a human rights violation. He's doing his part. He's just being ignored. But also, the American Bar Association has spoken out, and they have said, a quote, segregated housing should be for the briefest term and under the least restrictive conditions. You have Amnesty International also calling for an end to long-term solitary. And then we even have a High Commissioner for Human Rights advising that there needs to be efforts to bring this practice to a close. And finally, the American Correctional Association has even said total isolation for punishment is not an acceptable practice. So there are respective voices singing the very song that we're here singing. It's not that people are not acknowledging that this is bad. It's that there is a resistance to change in some of these jurisdictions, and in particular in Louisiana. We don't like change here, and that is what is happening. So you have these voices saying this is bad, and then add to that, we have several states. Maine has started making reforms. Mississippi, major reforms in reducing their solitary population by 90%. The state of Washington within the last 2 months has said, listen, we're going to start reducing and we're looking at a transition program. Indiana, there's been a federal ruling in Indiana that says now you can't isolate the mentally ill. So Indiana is making radical reforms, and Colorado has done the same. And just a month ago, the Federal Bureau of Prisons has said, we're going to go in and assess our policies. So you are correct, Freedom, in pointing out that there are voices, credible voices, that are speaking against this practice, and there are a number of jurisdictions who are listening and who are making the right decisions when it comes to constitutional violations and human rights violations, and we applaud those jurisdictions. Unfortunately, we're living in a place in Louisiana where there is a resistance to change. And what that means is that the public has to demand change. We cannot accept this place where we're not we're not gonna live in accordance with human rights principles. We have to demand the change that we want to see.
All right, I've got a tweet here. It says, "I've been listening intently, and I need to know if I missed something. Has there been a trial where these men were tried and convicted of murdering the prison guard? It is clear about the solitary confinement, but very unclear about the conviction for murdering the prison guard."
Another one, Liam. I want you to take this one.
Well, relative to the convictions, it's clear that the state fabricated the charge. As a matter of fact, one individual, Hezekiah Brown, was legally blind. He couldn't see. He wouldn't be able to determine his own parent from 15 yards away. But still, when the murder took place, they questioned who knows how many prisoners. And Hezekiah Brown at that time stated, "I couldn't see a thing. I don't know what happened." But he turns out to be the state's key witness against Albert and Harmon because he claimed in open court that he clearly recognized them as the perpetrators. Well, which statement is true? The initial statement, which came immediately after the incident itself in 1972, or some statement later on when he's been primed by the system, and many men who made statements that were harmful to Albert and Harmon later retracted those statements when they were released from Angola. The reason being, and it's understandable, that they were fearful for their lives, because I do know that Angola prisoners, officials, have had prisoners murder other prisoners in favor of officials. And then, too, they would have ways of making certain accidents occur. So people made false statements and later retracted and acknowledged that they made statements under pressure. And this is what it turned out to be. So as far as the trial, yes, they were tried for the murder of the guard. But still, when Albert's case was reversed the first two times, just as in this case, you know, the third instance is going to be, they put him in a situation where it would be like taking him from the living room of an arch enemy and putting him in the kitchen of that arch enemy. And so now, since we physically changed the location of the trial, then this means that the outcome has to be fair, and they're still using the same trumped up charges and false testimony, and they paid Hezekiah cigarettes. This is documented, as a matter of fact. This is not my speculation. They paid Hezekiah for his testimony. And while people outside say, well, how could they pay him? There's not that much money in prison. In prison, cigarettes represent money, because that is the medium of exchange. And he was given a carton of cigarettes weekly. And what is this other than buying testimony, right, which is contrary to statutory provisions? Really?
All right. Hang on a moment, Lonnie, because we've got to take a break here. 800-450-7876 or 855-797-TALK. We'll take your phone calls for our guest speaking about the Angola 3 right after this.
And now back to the Carl Nelson Show
on Washington, D.C.'s 1450
WOL Radio.
And we're back discussing the Angola 3 with attorney Angela Allen Bell, and also Parnell Herbert and Mo'ulamu. I must have mangled your name, brother. I'm sorry, Johnson.
That's okay, I understand. Three low syllables, Mo'ulamu, with the emphasis on the Lee.
Okay.
Mo'ulamu, but don't feel bad about it. I know you mean me now.
Let me ask you this. The brothers incarcerated now, are they spiritual? How are they coping?
When you mentioned spiritual before, you posed the question how they are coping.
Mm-hmm.
Evidently, they have grown and developed spiritually tremendously. Otherwise, they would have, just as so many others have done over the years, succumbed to the pressures to which they've been exposed for this unjust extended lockdown situation.
Wow.
As you mentioned earlier, that they have television. That those television sets are not for them. They're for the free man. They're for the guards up there. And those television sets on 24 hours a day. So it's not like they're doing them any favors by having a television set, because that television is very disturbing to them. Imagine yourself sleeping with a television on 24/7. And also what they're dealing with is other inmates who are brought to solitary, put in that same 6 by 9 foot cage, and people break under those conditions. They break under those conditions, being locked in there, hearing out. Someone asked Albert Woodfox when he gets out, what do you want to do? He said, I just want to go somewhere where it's quiet. So, I mean, you're in solitary confinement. Why would you want to isolate yourself? He said, no, it's not solid. There's no solitude in solitary. When you're in solitary confinement, you're hearing all these noise. You're hearing men crying, calling for their mother. You hear guards beating inmates in there. You hear people going crazy. You hear people beating their heads against the wall, trying to commit suicide to get out of there. But again, how do these brothers cope? As I mentioned earlier, these are two of the strongest brothers in the world. They are very spiritual. They've got something instilled in them that none of us, I'd say most people, just don't have. One of the biggest things they had, and they were blessed in the very beginning, they had each other. They had each other to feed on. And now, maybe 35 years later, they separated them. And, you know, one of the things we did when we went up to visit them, we coordinated our visit, and we made sure that someone went to visit Herman, Albert, and Zulu, who was another brother who hadn't even been mentioned. But someone went to visit all three of them at the same time, which meant they all got out of their cells, and they could see each other because they may not have seen each other for months. You know, they're on different tiers. They keep them separated. But then what the free man found was when we have them separated, all we're doing is spreading them around, and they're still doing this Black Panther work. They're still instilling humanity and working to help these young brothers to right writs and trying to work on their cases, the ones who are innocent, trying to help them get out of there. So finally they said, let's just put them in different prisons. Mm. But those brothers, they're as spiritual as can be, and they are, again, the strongest men I've ever known.
Are they involved in any organized religion? Because, you know, a lot of brothers go to prison, they, you know, become Muslim or they become Christians. Are they involved in either?
It's my understanding that they're spiritual people. They're not necessarily believers in a particular faith. And for them, this is a combination of a spiritual as well as a social movement. And I think that that is the reason why they've been able to withstand this period of isolation and challenge, because they understand that they're the face of a movement. And if they quit, that means the next inmate has to wait equally as long before they could be heard in the judicial realm. So they have tremendous weight on them at this moment because they're bringing the first lawsuit that will set a precedent for the nation. And so, yes, this is spiritual, but this is also social for them, and they understand the weight that is resting upon their shoulders, and they absolutely have no choice at this point but to continue to fight the good fight. And I want to also get back to something that was being discussed before the last break. Someone tweeted a question about are they convicted people. Before I became an attorney, I always trusted when I heard the word conviction that the convicted party was afforded process. And so I was a believer that a conviction meant that there was some integrity involved and that there's some evidence. But now that I've been a lawyer for many years, I caution people all the time about trusting when you hear the word conviction, because a conviction can be obtained with no evidence. It can be obtained through dishonest means. It could be obtained with jurors who are discriminating. It could be obtained based on absolutely nothing. And so I caution people, when you hear the word conviction, to always pause for a second. And remember also, when a person has gone through the appellate process, it is not meaning that another court is reviewing the case all over again. Oftentimes, that means that they sort of got a sniff test. Nobody really looks at it again thoroughly. It's a quick sniff, and it's gone through the cycle. And so once you hear there's a conviction and you hear it's been affirmed, be very cautious about believing that that means anything. In particular, concerning Wallace and Woodfox, when they were convicted, normally when there's a murder, you would do some type of test. You test the crime scene. that stuff was not done here, and that's really important because that's really all you have to work with is a crime scene, and then you have witnesses. So now if you have no real crime scene tested, the only other thing by default you can work on is witnesses. And as Walimo Johnson just mentioned, the lead witness here, Hezekiah, was a serial rapist. So now this is the person that the state decides they want to use in this case. I have a document that I'm going to read because it's important that I not paraphrase these words. And if you want, Carl, we can make this available for you to post so that the public can obtain copies. But this is dated for April the 7th, 1978, and it's a memo concerning Hezekiah Brown. And it's his own letterhead from Louisiana State Penitentiary. And this memo says, and I am directly quoting, "As discussed with you, I would like to have issued to the above-named inmate one carton of cigarettes per week. This, I feel, would partially fulfill commitments made to him in the past with respect to his testimony in the state's behalf in the Brent Miller murder case." So it's important now that if you have no crime scene evidence, and you have only witnesses, and now you see a document like this emerge suggesting that Hezekiah Brown was, in fact, equipped with a pack of cigarettes a week in exchange for testimony, anybody that accepts a conviction under these circumstances really needs to rethink what justice is. And so I'm cautioning anybody from this point forward, when you hear conviction, delve deeper. Ask yourself what evidence yielded that conviction. And in this case, this is the evidence that we have to work with. But then it gets worse because we've had multiple courts now in the state of Louisiana, recent as 2 weeks ago, to say not only was the conviction bad, but you got problems of discrimination in the grand jury. So now the people who made the decision were discriminatory and the evidence is all flawed. Exactly what is it that we're using to hold these two men in custody?
All right. I tell you what, we just about run out of time. So if you guys can give us real quick a summation, how people can get in touch with you, how people can help, I'd really appreciate it.
2 minutes.
Anybody in particular?
Hey, it doesn't matter. We've got 2 minutes, so let's...
Okay. I'm at Southern University Law Center, so I can be reached there. Angola 3 News is the website for all case updates. Anything else?
Anything else? Any other brothers? Parnell, real quick.
Parnell is here with phone number 832-494-4027. 832-494-4027.
Mahuwa
Lani. Walimu Johnson, area code 504, number 319-1620.
And if I could, I'd like to end with this quote from the state's brief that they filed before the court concerning Mr. Woodfox's grand jury claim. In their prayer for relief, the state of Louisiana actually said to the court that we're asking you, if you find that this grand jury did discriminate, not to rule in Woodfox's favor because it might open the floodgates for other people to come through with claims of discrimination.
Yeah.
And so I end on that note and just caution everybody to please get involved. Angola 3 News or contact any further information or for particulars on how you can assist.
All right. Thank you, guys. And thank you for really being out there for them. Folks, we got to run. We're just out of time. And I want to thank all three of you for keeping the Angola 3 alive. And you know what? Keep in touch with us and let us know, and we'll pass it on to the audience as well. As I mentioned, we got to roll out of here. Andre's up next. God willing, we'll join you tomorrow, 4 o'clock, right here on 1450 WOL.